Blog Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here, yeah. It's for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We
There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around the Jumbotron shows and fans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Brooks.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
Show this one, Mike.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
All right, welcome to RSG One Mic. This is D. Wills. All the hosts and callers are brought to you by Patreon. Go to Patreon to support your favorite underground artist or performer. You can also support RSG patreon.com/RSG Live. You can also find all RSG material at Real Sports Guys on Twitter, IG, and Facebook. And you can also find us on Apple and other podcast platforms. As you know, we're about to do it again. We are getting hot. We're getting regular in these streets, and we're back for another podcast. Hopefully you've been catching them with us and having a good time. We just recently dropped a podcast that we're about to drop with Doug Fisher, editor of Ring Magazine. It was incredible, so stay tuned on that. We'll probably drop that on YouTube and across the Blog Talk radio platform. So a lot happening here. We'll be announcing more stuff as we go. But hey, before I get started, I got to go to my man in the pick and roll. He always finishes. My man, Hank. What's up, man?
What's going on, D? You know what? I got to tell you, man. It's the most wonderful time of the year. And no,
That's right.
I'm not talking about Halloween. I'm not talking about getting close to Thanksgiving. Or for some of y'all knuckleheads out there already playing Christmas music, get out of here with that. No. I'm talking about this is the most wonderful time of the year. This is the time of the year. It happens every year. The air gets crisp. The leaves fall down. And hockey and basketball and baseball and football and college football are all in play all at the same time. It's the only time of the year that that happens, when all of the major sports align all at once. A sports fan has to get into his plasma, into his IV, so he can stay up and watch all of this plethora of great sports. It's the most wonderful time of the year. And, D, just want to let you know from last week, I didn't expect an arch rival today, but here we are.
Hey, I'm going to say this, man. I can't just say on Wisconsin. I can't just say go blue. I just gotta say, go Conson. I saw Coach today, Coach Chris today, so a little emotional. I said, you're going to my hometown, you know, high school across the street. You know, I'm gonna have to just watch that one with my eyes wide shut. That's how I'm about to come at it. Oh, this is a hard week for me, man. I'm glad I'm not gonna be in Ann Arbor. So I can't do it, but this is a great time of the year.
It is, but, you know, I got to tell you this. When, you know, like last year, I was hoping against hope when we played you all out there. You know, I knew that we was going to have to play our best game. We was going to need some quarterback play, and it didn't turn out. But I am like every other Michigan fan. I am excited about this matchup. They made it a night game. The team look like it's doing its thing. I'm going to be cautious. I'm not going to do a whole lot of whooping yet because I don't want to jinx these cats because they balling. They look good.
Well, they are.
And they one of those teams, and we'll talk about this later, but they one of them teams. One of them teams that you keep an eye out for them this year, okay? There's a lot in Ann Arbor. There's a lot that Jim Harbaugh has to work with. There's really no excuses. They're at home. It's night. The atmosphere is going to be hype. It's going to be crisp. We'll get into all that later, but, yeah, I'm geeked about that. My eyes going to be wide open.
And I think you're right. This is an exciting time of the year, and so much is happening. And, you know, as we go into the open mic, you listen to RSG One Mic. The exciting thing about this is all these different sports, but there's always a story brewing. So, and Hank, you'll love this. Why did Jimmy Butler had to go CCRB on everybody? You know. Now, for y'all who don't know, CCRB is this rec center on Michigan's campus where, you know, it's the kind of place where cats from town show up. You know, you might have a Michigan basketball player show up in the arena. You might have anybody in there. But there's always this one cat trying to prove why he should have gone to Division I. And is trying to call out everybody on the court. It could happen at CCRB. For y'all people from Ann Arbor, it's at Burns Park. It could be Summit Park back in the day. It's always that cat that think he gonna beat you with yours and with his and will talk you all the way out the damn arena and yell at everybody on every shot and just cause major commotion. And that's what it sounded like Jimmy Butler did in that practice in Minnesota. He just basically came in there with the third unit and said, "I'm just housing this." Who got next? He kept in game point like, "Who got next?" He yelling at the GM, the coach, "You want some? You want to team up? Why don't you lace them up?" I mean, he just went straight crazy on it. What did you think about when you heard that?
Well, you know what? You see why. See, this is what happens when you've got a scorned athlete, okay? He wanted to be traded. You don't want to be in Minnesota, all right? Now, he ain't going to sit around and be a fool and start sitting out games. So, yeah, he clowned. But the thing was, is how he set it all up. He knew the media was going to be there, right?
Yes.
Acts a fool, calls, he said, y'all can't win without me. He pulled a, y'all ain't nothing without David Ruffin. You know, he pulled one of those moves, right? So he does that. He goes and sits down with ESPN's Rachel Nichols, calls out his teammates, calls out the young fellas. But here's the thing that cracks me up, though. He turns around, right, and then calls a player-only meeting. Can you imagine that you don't sit out here and clown me?
How you gonna call a player's
only fan? Yeah, let's have one. That man, there's been so many chairs turned over if I was up in this. How you gonna clown me like that? He gonna have a players only meeting and say, "Listen, this ain't about you all. You know I called you out. It's about management." He must be out of his mind. I mean, here's the thing about something like that, okay? But you gotta understand. And with Jimmy Butler, he wants to be traded. He wants to be moved. But what kind of teammate are you now, Cat? Because if you got problems with management, then there's ways of handling it. But what kind of team player? What kind of team player are you gonna be? All right, you don't get your way or something like that, and you go to a team that's got a veteran presence on there. What's that really saying? You gotta ask yourself that. You know, you got a lot of players out there that's got that wealth of talent. Then they got to figure out a way to humble themselves. That, you know, he kind of put himself out there with that one.
But the thing about it is, by doing it, he actually proved his point. This is why I'm saying this. How are you Townsend and any of them other cats, and there wasn't no fight? Like,
that's my question.
If you, this is the CCRB part. If it's really CCRB, then they fighting across three courts. I am building. I've been in there.
We ain't playing no hoop today.
This is one of the great scenes in Michigan lore that nobody ever saw. So there's other places
called
I am building. I'm going to give you an example. Boston. Hank, you know Mark Boston. Mark Boston played at San Diego University. Mark Boston, local product. Mark was one of the cats who got San Diego to the tournament way back in the day. Mark was a baller. should have been even higher in terms of where he would have gone. But San Diego's Division I program play. Mark comes on from Chrisman. This is when Michigan had, I think, number one team. This is when they had Butch. This is when they had Henderson, Relford, all those cats. That's the cats that lost to Villanova in the first round. You make sense. So I'm in the gym. We're already playing with Gar Thompson going up and down the court. So then they all show up. That's when we realize it's time to go to the sidelines. We're in high school. It's the big boys in here. Mark is dunking on the whole entire Michigan team. I mean, literally, you're talking about these cats are ranked number one in the country, and he's giving them – and Mark's not a yeller. Mike was just going and doing his business, putting in work. My brother Steve and Connie was in the arena, on the court, in the place, you know, them playing as well. All of a sudden, people start talking. Next thing I know is a waylay going from one end of the court to the next. I don't know who broke it up. I didn't know how to jump in. You know, I was only like 15, 16 years old. But people wasn't having getting embarrassed. These guys, Townsend and Wiggins, just took it.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm a coach, I'm making – and I'm a GM, I'm looking at how these young cats are reacting. Now, if you go after him and he beats you down, at least you did it. But to just take it actually validates his point, because at no point in any of the reporting that I heard that Wiggins or Towns did anything in response to this. Everybody was in awe. This is basketball competition. That would never happen up on pickup court. That would never happen in that space. Somebody would just, you know, even when Jordan was doing his fighting, people would fight back. Now, they might get beat down. Steve Kerr might have got slapped or whatever, but they wasn't taking it, right? These cats just kind of took it. So there's, if I'm management, who am I rolling with?
Well, see, this is the thing. That's a good question. But see, this is that passive aggressive crap that's going on right now in sports. But that drives me nuts. It's like you said, if you're gonna clown me like that out in public, then yeah, something's gonna go on. But the fact that he was able to have a team only players only meeting off the floor, and they still didn't get involved in nothing. There still was no scuffle. You know, I question that. I question that quite a bit. Yeah, he got his point across, and he'll probably be moved. He actually is a good influence. I mean, he actually did influence what they wanted to do. They canceled practice today. The media was supposed to be back there today. The Timberwolves canceled practice, canceled the media out there. So there's something going on out there, but you're right. From a player's perspective, it's like, where's your heart? Where's your testicles? I mean, how do you just let somebody just call you out and clown you and you don't say nothing?
You pumping glue away. That's it. I mean, if I'm in the West, I'm like, you know, all them cats, they got some beasts in the West. You know, they already like, oh, I can't wait for Jimmy to leave. We're going to eat these youngins up. If they taking it like that, oh, wait till they see us. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's going to be... I mean, if I'm Tibbs, you know Tibbs is one of them tough iron. Like, that had to hurt his heart. Y'all let him talk to your coach like this. Like, I'm the one defending y'all. And I'm, you know, it's going to be out. The ripple effect on this is going to be worth trying to monitor and see what's going on. Because that's what I came away with that. Is like, he did that. He was not only making a point, but he made his point. Because Woj gets everything. Woj didn't say, you know, Big Cat tried to choke him out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He didn't say that. Or they had to separate him. He didn't say any of that. You know, even if you think about Tristan. Think about how Tristan got treated at the end of the finals, right? Tristan didn't let that go. He saw Draymond at the party. He hit him right across the noggin. He like, I'm from the south side of Nassau. I'm getting mine. I didn't get it in the game.
Right.
You can say if we step up any time out the arena, we're going to step up. Tristan took that for real. He went out there in the streets. I'm not advocating violence. But at a certain point, this game is about get eaten. And that's the part that Jimmy Butler understands. Like that, he's a fighter. He came out of Marquette with I'm scrapping for everything. And that's why Tibbs loves it. And if those cats are going to try to win at a level that they think they want to win, I think they're looking at why he is who he is. So we have to monitor that. We'll keep an eye on it. You're right. A players only meeting. I can't even understand that. We're gonna go to college football. You know, every week we check in, and kind of get a feel for surprises and, you know, who's in the weeds kind of lurking, making that move that we got to pay attention to. You know, who surprised you this past weekend in terms of teams, Hank? Darnell, if you out there, you can jump in on this one too after Hank. You know, if you have a team that surprised you. What team surprised you, Hank?
What team surprised me? You know, in a not a good way, was Michigan State.
Oh, my
goodness.
They
surprised me because clearly this team is working with smoke and mirrors. All right, now this is a team that they had some great seasons, okay? Went to the playoff, you know, but they went 3-9, surprised everybody, won 10 games last year, but they haven't looked good all year, okay? They go out west, they lose to Arizona State. They should have got beat by Utah State. You know, we talked at length about the game that Michigan played against Northwestern. And then they go out and lose to Northwestern. And Northwestern rushed for 8 yards in that game. The 8 yards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And they beat Michigan State by 2 scores. Okay? Michigan State was the workie was supposed to have been a Heisman candidate. They had all these players coming back. And they're not playing well. And it don't look good. That's the thing, too. So, you know, we've talked about all these teams that's in the weeds and stuff like that. But this team right here, with everything that they had going for them, is a grave disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and it's funny because people are giving Michigan State the benefit of the doubt. Like, well, they'll right this ship. They'll get it back. But I'm talking about who they going to right the ship with. Like, I watched that team, and I'm not quite confident. And for Northwestern to come in there and just, you know, really kind of physically play with them, you know, Pat Fitzgerald, I'm telling you, you got some kids, you know, they're not going to, you know, they're going to compete against some of these elite teams. They won't beat them. But if you below elite, they're going to come at you. Like, he built a program where it's like, we're going to get 9 wins. And in that 9 wins, we're going to get a Michigan State victory on the road, right? He's gotten a program to that. And to me, that's Northwestern, right? Where they can play on a New Year's Day bowl or play in one of the top bowls. You know, they might not ever get to the four. They might have one of those runs every once in a while. But they're going to beat the teams they should, and then they're going to get that one elite win during the year. And this, I think Michigan State has been – people have been trying to hype them. I heard Herb Street, these guys, just say, you know, they're going to pull it back together. I think this Northwestern game showed they got a lot to clean up. Now,
they do.
That doesn't mean when Michigan comes to town, they're not going to play. The rivalry game is a rivalry game. Build records out, and you know, if they find a way to rise up in that game, has nothing to do with them being back. It has the fact that it has to do with it being Michigan, and it's a rivalry game. But, yeah, that's a team that at this point is very disappointing. You know, a team that surprised me, and not – how could I say this? Because their favorite son is boxing this weekend. Nebraska surprised me how bad they are on defense. I got to say this again. My goodness. I just
– Yeah.
I mean, Scott Frost has got to someday just think, did I take the right – should I just stay in Florida? I mean, I said it on one of my drops. They should just be the no shirts, not the black shirts. It's funny. I was up in the press box like, we're going to find out what shirts they're wearing tonight. Pretty quick, we found out they weren't wearing black shirts. He got some offensive talent. He got some people. But, you know, Nebraska is just – it hurts your eyes they're not having any resistance on defense at all. They got a couple good players, but they don't have anything. You know, I just don't – I don't know where – I mean, he's going to get a recruiting class. And he's going to get together. But, my goodness, they're farther away than I thought. And I'm just surprised that they just are not fighting the way you would think Nebraska players would fight, regardless of having, you know, a new coach come in. I'm just, you know, just not competing on defense. Offensively, they compete. You know, Martinez, that kid don't have no quit in him, and that's his bright spot. But defensively, good. Like, Cass is making business decisions. Like, they're making some business decisions on defense. And I'm trying to figure out what business you making decisions for. Because if y'all ain't stopping nobody, I don't know too many NFL teams are going to be looking at you. Like, no, you cannot be in the bottom of, you know, of the division of college football and defense and think somebody's going to try and pluck you. So that right there is, I'm just with my own eyes live, just like, wow, these cats are not very good. And it's not like they don't have athletes, not like they don't have a couple of 4 or 5-star players on that defense. Kids are just not playing hard.
That's the thing, D, that I wanted to put a plug right there. It doesn't mean to me. Is that how in the world, you got Scott Frost, and I do parallel Nebraska with Scott Frost to Michigan with Jim Harbaugh. Because when Jim Harbaugh came to Michigan, Michigan finished that season 5-7. There was a debacle of a season that year, okay, if you recall. Scott Frost coming in to Nebraska, the same thing. Now, the thing that I don't understand is, that's Nebraska. Do they have the number one? Do they have some of the top recruiting classes? No, but they still got some athletes over there. That's a Power 5 school. They're a Big 10 school. They are a traditional power, okay? So what I don't understand, you're talking about the defense. I don't see any improvement. This is the thing that is troubling me with this team, is that we're now 5 weeks in, and are they supposed to beat the Wisconsin? No, probably not. Are they supposed to beat a Michigan in Ann Arbor? No, probably not. But my God, how do you give up 40-something points to Purdue?
Yeah.
How do you do that at home when you are starving for a win? Your coach has gone out there and said, this is a winnable game. And, oh, by the way, Purdue lost to Eastern at home. Okay? See, this is the thing. I don't know if these kids don't have no heart. Some of this, you got to look at Scott Frost. Okay? I know you got to – you know who he reminds me of, truly? He reminds me of when Rich Rodriguez came to Ann Arbor. Let me explain why. Because I'm going to put my system in come hell or high water, right, regardless of the talent that I have, because that's what I want to do. Now, what happens when you do that, when you decide to scrap everything that was before you and just go totally on a rebuild, it's going to be real interesting how long the student body, the fan base, and the administration is going to take this, all right? Scott Frost is supposed to be, the prodigal son. But when you look at these other coaches that's taken over their programs, Jim Harbaugh did not go winless in his first 6 games in Ann Arbor. Neither did Paul Chryst, okay? And neither did any of these other coaches that took over their alma maters, if you will, or the schools that they were accustomed to. There is something there, there's supposed to be something there, that brings that, whatever that school's tradition is. So you may not be very good, but you're going to play with the pride on both sides. Now, they're one of the few programs that's actually got a name for their defense. They call themselves the Black Shirts. They're giving up 40 points a game. You know, that kind of craziness. And it's like there just doesn't seem to be a sense of urgency there. And that's the piece that I don't understand. I don't see any improvement from Nebraska. I would like to see Nebraska, you know, challenge Wisconsin in the West so that the Big Ten can be a complete conference, not just the Big Ten East and Wisconsin and everybody and the contributors, you know. But I don't see any improvement. And you're absolutely right about that. And you got to look at that coaching staff, look at Scott Frost, and say, I got to do something different. Because this team, they didn't have Bethune-Cookman on their schedule. They might not win a ball game this year.
That's what I was saying. I'm looking at this. So in the last 3 games, they gave up 56 to Michigan. They gave up 42 to Purdue and 41 to Wisconsin. In the past 2 games, their offense gave them, in the Purdue game, gave them 28, which against Purdue should be enough to have you in the game to win, right?
Right.
And they scored 24 against Wisconsin, and that offense was moving the ball a little bit against Wisconsin defense. So, you know, they got Nebraska, they got Northwestern coming up, Minnesota, but Minnesota's strong. So, I mean, compared to them, they got Minnesota coming up, they got Boone Cookman. I think that might be a push-em game. You know, you people out there in Vegas. You know, that might be able to put a few dollars on. I'm just, my brothers down, they might come out and step on them, you know, do something, you know, Omega. No, I'll leave it alone. They got Ohio State. That could be 70. By that point, they might put 70 on them. And Illinois is possible.
Rock bottom at that point.
Illinois, Good thing they got Northwestern in Illinois. Because Illinois they'd be in trouble too. Good thing they got them. And then Michigan State gonna need a redemption win by that point. And then Iowa gonna put it on them. So yeah, you're right. It's like, boy, this stuff make you think I get on a plane and go back to Florida. I can't mess with this. I thought I was coming home to something. Dr. Osborne, my mentor, what do we do? What do we do? I gotta go home. So that's the team that surprised me. Teams that are in the weeds that I think would be some teams to watch. Florida waking up. Now, I saw them last year down against Michigan down in Dallas. They had some injuries going on, but Florida struggled a little bit. Florida defenses look like it's coming together. They look like they got something going on down there. And then West Virginia, they still got Oklahoma on the schedule. They still have Texas on the schedule, but I think they just put up 500 yards total offense in this previous game. Dana is, Dana's that offensive guy. I'm trying to wonder whether or not they're doing it defensively, but they are playing some defense. Those are some teams that are kind of lurking in the shadows that I think you need to pay attention to. And another team that's sneaking up, a little rough start early on, is Oregon. Oregon's starting to put some together. They got Washington coming up this week. They're sitting at 4-1 right now against Washington at 5-1. So there's some teams kind of lurking that kind of getting it together, pulling together in ways that people were anticipating Michigan State was going to pull it together. But you got some of these other teams who people weren't quite sure early on was going to look great that are beginning to kind of put some stuff together. It may, if nothing else, help to decide who gets in the four because they get upset down the stretch over a team. What team do you think might be in that area? I know you talked a little bit about Michigan.
Yeah, here's what I want you to ask a question for you before I go on. Now, Florida, they're coming on, but now the question I'm asking you is, was that more Florida's coming on or that LSU is starting to buoy out a little bit? Because here's the thing, LSU was that surprise team that all of a sudden had all these quality wins. But now, that wasn't a good game played by them, okay? Not at all. That's a game that they should have won, that they pretty much handed to Florida, all right? So I'm starting to wonder, and I gave Ed Orgeron some premature credit last week because now when I look up and I see Auburn's done lost again, and now they're not playing. This game looked more like an Ed Orgeron type of team. And I'm asking you, but go on, do you think that what is your feeling? Is that Florida coming up, or was that just an LSU team that, like I said, the water's starting to find its level?
Well, I mean, you also had Tebow coming out, the emotional guy, talking about, he was made for Florida, he'll die in Florida. So they had some other elements coming in. I think there's a couple things here. I think LSU has some issues, still developing offensively. They got a great defense. And LSU will be a top 10 team. So a victory over a top 10 team is a victory over a top 10 team. So that's one of it. I think that Florida is beginning to put together, from a defensive standpoint, I think they're beginning to find their identity there, and I think they're beginning to find some things offensive. They got talent. So a win like this LSU stuff, part of it is getting these kids a feeling that they can win a big game against a big team. I don't think LSU is going to – we'll find a little bit about LSU when they play Georgia. But I think LSU is still that next rung down. I think they'll still finish in the top 10. They've always had offensive challenges, even in Les Miles, but they've always overcome it. They got a top defense. And so that's a great victory for Florida as you're trying to build a program. And what I'm saying is I can see them right now. They're sitting at 22. This is a team that could start to get into that, 10-11 range, which means they're going to have some upsets, which means they're going to win some games against some folks that last year and the year before weren't winning. They just weren't mature enough to win. You know what I'm saying? They weren't able to do. And when you think about their schedule, if they can beat Georgia, they play Missouri. That's very winnable. They got South Carolina. That's very winnable. They got Idaho. That's winnable. And then they got Florida State. That's winnable. I mean, the only game they can probably lose coming out if they just play the way they're supposed to play is Georgia. And I think Georgia's suspect. They're still trying to figure out the quarterback situation. And they created that. Again, you had a kid who took you to the national championship, and now you create this quarterback controversy. Yeah, you're supposed to get another talented cat behind him. Don't mean he got to start. Like, I don't understand these coaches. Now, you know, Tua, he breaks the mold. Young man breaks the mold. I mean, the way they score points, I can't question it. You know, you can't complain about that. But these other cats, Fromm has got to stay. So they got their own little issues, which means I think Florida's in a position to win that game. The rest of the games they can win, so they can win out. If they win out, then they might end up in, you know, and they beat Georgia, they win what? They win the East. Now they in the SEC championship. Anything can happen in that game. You know, so that you weren't expecting them to be in that. So if they beat Georgia, they might end up being in the top 10. Are they better than those top 5 or 6 teams? I don't know. But they can basically run the table. And I'm saying that after watching them last year and saying they're a long way from being anything real. They surprising me. So the LSU game is a belief win. Belief in the system. You know what I'm saying? You got to have a win no matter how it is that the kids say we believe in what we're doing. You understand? And that's a belief in what we're doing that allow for you to then – if they beat Georgia, is it because they had the belief win? If they were lost to LSU, they might have housed them. So that's the part that I think, and it's hard. I got the same kind of reservations you have. But for some, you look at their schedule, they can mess around the table. Their next loss might not come until they make it to the SEC championship.
Right.
And Gator fans are the most annoying fans you ever going to be around. So I'm going to say that straight out. But I talked as much junk as anybody in Jerry's house when they took that whooping. But going in, they had a lot to talk about. So I'm not really rooting for them to win. I'm just saying I got to be objective.
Right.
So who do you have kind of sitting in the cut?
Well, you know what? The easy money for me would be on Michigan because you got the next 3 games that could define the season. But everybody is watching, you know, they're going to be right out there up front and center, prime time, so people are going to be able to see them. But the team, D, that nobody's talking about them at all, okay? North Carolina State.
NC State. I'm going to say that. Doran's doing his thing.
Nobody's talking about this team at all. Everybody's talking about the win streak of Central Florida and the rise of Notre Dame. But North Carolina State is just quietly putting it together. All right? And oh, by the way, they got Clemson at home on the 20th. All right? And that's going to be an interesting game because, see, they don't play this week. They got a bye week. So they don't play this week. So they get a chance to get prepared for Clemson. And I don't care what nobody say. They still got a freshman quarterback. Now, what Clemson has started to do is run the football a little bit, but that's going to be an interesting game. That's going to be a telltale game in the ACC. All right, that game alone could really determine the fate of Clemson and their chances for the college football playoff. But NC State's been playing good football. They've been playing solid defense, and they're kind of rough to beat down there. So that's one of those teams that, you know, keep an eye on them. You know, no one's paying them any attention, but they're 5-0. They're ranked number 20 in the country, but they're just kind of like literally lying in the weeds. If you're not a college football geek fan, you ain't even thinking about NC State.
And you know, Coach Doran is you know, we've had a chance to interview him on the air, and like he's a guy that just kind of is straight shooter. You know, coach, he was a coordinator here at Wisconsin. But had success at NIU, then went to NC State and kind of quietly been building the program. You know, he had Chubb on defense last year, right, who went on now success. So he's had a number of actually players go on to the league. In some ways, I think he's kind of building that Wisconsin Southeast type of program where it's just kind of solid players. He got some stars, but nobody talks about him, but he just continues to win. I think that Clemson game just because, you know, that quarterback situation is what it is. And a team like NC State can put a lot of pressure on you. And
yeah.
And so I think that's a great, that's an excellent. I was looking at them when I was thinking about it. I think that's an excellent call, excellent call. As usual, Mr. Hank Bank, you doing it all again. You're killing it. You're killing it, my man. You know, we're going to stick with you, man, and kind of get into a little bit of baseball, man. Now, man, New York. Wow. The Red Sox went in there and just did straight beat town. I remember the Red Sox were just, it was kind of like that, you know, that scene in Charlie Brown when he go kick the football. And they just think they're going to kick that football, and Yankees just pull that ball out from under them, and they just land on their head. And they had that
right.
Incredible comeback, went on to win the World Series. Now we in this, in the 21st century, and this is role reversals. They just put it on them, man. And, you know, a lot of people were favoring the Yankees, coming into this just because – you know, there wasn't a lot of, they weren't really sure what was, happening with the, with the Red Sox ace and everything else. But they just kind of, and they still kind of play that, the Red Sox are the one team that kind of play that, kind of moving the ball. They're not the ones who are sitting on pitches trying to hit home runs. They're playing baseball the old-fashioned way. You know, they are
right.
Moving the runner. They're doing all the other kinds of things going on. But I know you've been watching them, man. What do you come up with that series, man? And like, what happened?
First of all, I was disappointed in this series. Okay, this was the series that I thought was going to be one of those five game slobber knockers, and it looked like it was going to start off that way. Okay, but here's the thing, D, that I think threw the Yankees off, right? If it's your turn to pitch, and everybody done told you, you pitch tomorrow night, and the game starts at 7:45, it's the playoffs. You pitch tomorrow night, game starts at 7:45, you in the playoffs. Eovaldi, the pitcher for the Yankees, my man shows up at 7:30 on his night to pitch and say, oh, I forgot what time the game started. Are you kidding me? He promptly goes out and gets shelled. Now, let me tell you what happened to the Yankees, okay? That threw the Yankees for the rest of that series. If you recall, they went to New York. Series was tied at 1-1, all right? Everybody's like, okay, this is what we're looking for. This is going to be a knockdown dragout. My man throws off the whole momentum of the Yankees, okay? Your pitcher, your starting pitcher. He shows up at 7:30. He's not warmed up. He's not loose. He's not ready. Okay? He don't go four innings. They get shelled 16-2, 16-3, something crazy like that. Okay? Then you got to go with old big fat CC to try to tie it back together. It was over. Their psyche was shot. It was done. That's what I saw. I got into the head of the Yankees. Let me say this to you, okay? The Boston Red Sox.
You know that's a scary place. You said you got to the head of the Yankees. You know that's a scary place.
Yeah, that's a scary place because, see, I can't stand the Yankees, all right? But the Boston Red Sox made me a Yankee fan. And I got into the head as a baseball fan. I'm thinking to myself, now I know this is my chief rival, okay? This is a historic rivalry. You know, if nothing gets your blood going, is playing your rival for a chance to win a championship. Now I'm going to take y'all on a journey with me for a minute, okay? Think about this for a minute. Both of y'all good. Both of y'all have won 100 games this year, okay? You missed out on winning the division by maybe 5.5 games, but I got a bill. I won me 100 games too. We can hang with y'all, and we're going to upset y'all. So y'all had a record-breaking season. We're going to break y'all heart. And one of your own, ain't ready. You can't even geek him up because he ain't even at the field yet. You can't even relax because where the starting pitcher at? You know how it is, okay? If everything needs to be right when you about to go against your rival because you got to go. My
That's
man
right.
ain't ready. Yo, my man ain't ready. He ain't here. What we gonna do? Now I can't think. Now I can't get into my mojo. Boston comes out and hangs 16 on you. And oh, by the way, you gotta play tomorrow night. Now you gotta play tomorrow night for your whole season. Okay? This game wasn't even competitive. All right? You still thinking about this game going into the fourth and deciding game. It was an embarrassment. And you know what? That young man should be ashamed of himself. He brought down a whole team with his selfishness, with his inability to do what he's supposed to do. That's what happened here, okay? Because you know you got to be in some sort of mindset. They beat Boston in game two, okay? Put it on them in game two right there at Fenway Park. We coming home. We hyped. We getting ready. My man hanging out. I don't know what he was doing. But how do you forget it's your turn to pitch, dude? Where you at? And that took him out. That's what I saw. And they was pissed about it because they couldn't recover from that. Had they lost 2-1, 3-2, 5-7-6, even if they had lost in the last inning, they'd been ready to go. But they took something away. They took their heart away by scoring 16 runs. They were pissed. They couldn't get it together. And there went the series. That's what happened.
He had an 18 ERA. He gave up 6 runs in 3 innings.
Yeah.
A third of an inning, whatever, Lynn gave up another 3. I mean, they were out of it.
They were out of it. They were mentally out of it. Them not knowing what a damn pitcher was, they were out of it. Okay? In the meantime, Boston came ready. We got to go to New York. We remember having a good season. Thought we had these dudes, Ben Berry and Boone comes up and hits the home run to send us home. And Aaron Boone happens to be the manager. Oh, they was ready. Boston was ready, and New York wasn't, and that killed the Yankees. And that should have been a series for the ages. It's unfortunate.
You listen to Real Sports Guys, One Mic. We're here talking a little baseball about the Boston and Yankee series. But I want to move on out of Astros, the new Rodney Dangerfield, man. Cats coming out mad. They get no prime time. Are they being disrespected? What's going on? No prime time. What's going on with the Astros? They feel like they ain't getting no love.
It wasn't the Astros' fault, man. It had nothing to do with the Astros at all, okay? It was who the Astros was playing, okay? Unless you was in Eastern Ohio, okay, Northeastern Ohio, you didn't care to see Cleveland, all right? Trust me when I tell you, the Milwaukee Brewers in the National League were the darlings, okay? You had Hollywood out there with the Dodgers, all right? You had, like I said, the heavyweight fight with Boston and New York. Nobody wanted to see Cleveland. Everybody thought Cleveland got into the playoffs by default because they played in the American League Central. You heard me tell you that. Okay? They thought every last one of their wins was based upon the fact that the Central was sorry. Versus the Houston Astros, the defending champ, they thought what that was going to be is exactly what it was. It was a walkover. That's what everybody thought it was going to be, and they figured, you know what? Let's wait because Houston is going to play the winner of this heavyweight bash. So that's what you saw. Baseball fans, and I'm telling you, baseball fans, they just assumed, and it was right, that Houston was going to win that series. The only way Houston was going to get on prime time if that series had been gone back to Cleveland 1-1. Had that series gone back to Cleveland 1-1 or Cleveland had a 2-0 lead going back to Cleveland, now it was going to see must-see TV. Outside of that, that was a given more than anything else. It wasn't Houston's fault. It was who they was playing. You know?
And I think baseball didn't want to give Chief Wahoo any shine.
I don't think so either.
I think, you know, Cleveland fans got to think about that. You know, y'all got a mascot that look like y'all got that character going on. Baseball might have been like, we don't have to give you any shine. We'll give you that 135 start.
Trust me when I tell you that it was not the Cleveland Indians who baseball wanted to, you know, showcase. They wanted to showcase Milwaukee Brewers and Christian Yelich. They wanted to showcase the Yankees and the Sox. And hell, they even have a problem saying welcome back to the playoffs to the Braves, even though he was short lived. Thanks for playing. But you're absolutely right on that. I fully agree with you there. There was no desire to show the Cleveland Indians in any way, shape, fashion, or form. And face it, the Indians won the Central Ledger. They got a good team, okay? They got a formidable team, but they were going to be the bridesmaid this year, okay? You had three teams in the American League that won 100 games, okay? And two of them was playing each other. So again, unless Cleveland had somehow won a ball game, or even had a lead in that, they were going to be also rans. Nobody cared. They was waiting to get to the next series. I just didn't expect it to be this soon.
Before we go to our next segment with Darnell, I want you to give us a little bit of thoughts on with the ALCS and the NLCS, kind of what you think might happen.
Listen, I'm gonna be the first one on here to tell our listeners, do not sleep on the Milwaukee Brewers. Okay? I had an opportunity to watch the Brewers probably more in these playoffs than I have all season. I always thought there was a cute little story. This is a solid baseball team.
Yep.
They've got a very strong defense. They hit the ball well. Christian Yelich, one of the most exciting young players in the league, hit for two cycles this year. In my opinion, is going to be the league MVP. A solid pitching staff, Gio Gonzalez, who used to be with the Nationals when they had that murderous row pitching staff. You know, now doing his thing. You know, he's going to be starting the series now against the Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw. And be careful if Milwaukee takes that first game, and don't be surprised if they don't beat Kershaw. That's what you want to watch. In the American League, you can't ask for nothing better than the team with the best record against the defending champs. Again, another series since 1977, and we had two teams play who both had over 100 wins. And playing for a championship series. This is going to be a good one. It's going to be a real. We're going to see how good Houston really is, because Boston really has assembled an all-star team. Okay, when you think about their pitching staff with Chris Sale and Porcello and David Price and Kimbrel, you know you got J.D. Martinez. They've got a lot of weapons. But then so does Houston. All right, they started with J.V. Justin Verlander, and so this is going to Chris Sale against Justin Verlander. You would think a few years ago, D, this would be the White Sox versus the Tigers. You know, now you got it being the Red Sox against Houston. But this is going to be a solid series. I look for this to go seven. This is a toss-up. You know, you got all that talent on Boston against the experience now, dare I say, the playoff experience now of the Houston Astros. And it was going to see in my opinion, the winner of this series is your World Series champion, unless barring some crazy injury or something. This is the one. But do not sleep on the Milwaukee Brewers. That is a feisty squad.
Well, hey, we'll keep posted. We'll keep monitoring it. This has been great. You listen to RSG One Mike. We're here with Hank and Devon and my man Darnell. We're about to bring in. We got a segment we created, but I'm proud of this young man. He participated in our recent Cypher podcast where we had with Dougie Fisher from Ring Magazine, who's the editor there, and did a really good job with that interview. And so we went to carve a little moment called The Moment with Darnell, where he's doing a moment for boxing there and talking a little bit of boxing, kind of bringing us in. So, Darnell, you in the house?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, man. Take it away. I'm going to stay with you on this one. So do your thing.
All right, Billy Joe Saunders versus Demetrius Andrade is off. The fight was scheduled to take place on October the 20th for the WBO middleweight championship, and Billy Joe Saunders has tested positive for a stimulant called oxyfurine. And today he has relinquished his title, and Demetrius Andrade will fight somebody else for the title, somebody we don't know, named Walter or something. You have any thoughts about that, Devon?
So they're just trying to give him the belt, huh? He had to do all that training. They're going to find a way. They felt sorry for him, so they're going to try to give him the consolation prize and give him the belt. Now, wasn't Saunders or something like that just complaining a lot about steroid use and everything else or whatever. Wasn't he like out there a little bit around that issue? And it, you know, is it, you know, folks in glass house kind of thing, you know, can't really throw stones. What's going on with that?
Like what the old heads used to say, it ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun, but then we go. Silas is the main one talking about how Canelo Alvarez should be banned for life, and now he's testing positive now.
See, you need to be careful about coming out here in judgment and talking about folks all together. But yeah, I think it's you know, they'll find a way to smooth that over. You know, we've had a number of incidents with this stuff lately. They'll find a way to move on to the next one, and you know, probably when he's ready, he'll live with a suspension. He'll come back and fight again.
All right. Also, coming up this week, we have the number one power fighter in the world, Terrence Crawford, fighting against Jose Benavidez, the older brother of David Benavidez, here on ESPN. They've had a couple of back and forth going on this week. We saw yesterday Jose Benavidez went to Terrence Crawford's gym, and he was talking mess, and they almost got into it. Did you see this, Yvonne?
I heard a little bit of it. This is what I'm gonna say, Benavidez. Let sleeping dogs lie. I mean, it's gonna be in Nebraska too. I mean, and this guy Crawford, I've seen him beat cats and hold them up just to punish them. So I don't know if that's a good move, man. You know, certain cats you can do that and go at with. He ain't that kind of cat. Like this cat, he would fight you in the ring. He'll fight you out the ring. So I don't think that's a good move for him. I think he's going to sleep. I think he's going to sleep early. No, I would say I think he might hold him up and beat him up a little more. I'm thinking sixth round, he's going to put him to sleep, because that's one thing you don't do. You don't disrespect Terrence Bud Crawford.
All right. Last week, we had a very big fight in the world of MMA, UFC 229. We had Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Conor McGregor. And this fight was pretty much a wash. Khabib from round one showed his prowess on the ground game and his wrestling game, and he dominated Conor McGregor and eventually submitted him in the fourth round. But the most important thing was what happened after the fight.
Yes.
Khabib Nurmagomedov, well, let's back up a little bit. A couple of members of Conor McGregor's camp, in particular, Dylan Danish, which is his jiu-jitsu coach, he was talking to Khabib pretty much throughout the whole fight. But after the fight, he specifically said, or someone from the crowd, some sources from the crowd were saying that he called him some Muslim slurs, which I'm not going to repeat on this on the airways over here. But after this, it's infuriated Khabib. Khabib threw his mouthpiece at him and then jumped over the cage. After he jumped over the cage, he charged at Dylan, and then a brawl ensued. Did you see this?
Yeah, and I would say this. Khabib comes from the same cloth as Crawford. These are cats who take stuff literally. They ain't into the promotion game. They into the beatdown game. Like, it was like after the fight was over, he was still looking like he could fight more rounds. Like, you already saw he was heated, and he went over that fence. You know, he went crazy. The crazy thing about it was how they allowed them cats to go right back over the fence and get at Connor. Like, you can't stop him from going out, but you should be able to stop cats from coming in. I mean, they came in and bum rushed Connor like he was at one of them Irish pubs. It was like, we just going to jump you and beat you down. It was crazy. And then you got Dana White up here acting like he dejected, but counting checks in the back room. That's the funny thing about it. I mean, Dana came out. I know people say he really hates this, but he didn't send them checks back. He ain't sending none of that money back. He ain't sending anything back. In fact, if Khabib gets sanctioned in Vegas, he'll be fighting in the O2 Arena in the UK. I mean, UFC is global, or he'll be fighting down in Brazil. You know, he can fight again. He just can't fight in Vegas. So I think it was interesting, but it was Dana White's thing as a promoter to control. He had to prep Khabib for what promotions are like. He needed to be talking to him in his ear. It doesn't seem like cats were in his ear keeping him on the promotional tip, because he takes that stuff seriously. You talk about his religion, his family. So, but when he went over that fence, I was like, oh, somebody about to get choked out, because he don't believe in just beating you. Like the way he was beating Conor, he was beating Conor like Ali. Remember the cat? We didn't want to call him Ali. Kept calling him Cassius. He kept beating him. That was the mode Khabib was in. Like, you're gonna respect my name. You know, he was in some straight up baby mode. My name is my name. Put some respect on my name. You know, that was what he was in. He was in that kind of, you know, old school no limit soldier type move. Like, that was Khabib in that mode. And you could tell, you could see his eyes. Like, I could see it through the television. I don't know how anybody in the ring could see that he was still heated after it was over. So, you know, I'm hoping, you know, kind of like we talked about with Doug, is that, you know, maybe only give him 6 months, give him a fine, and take it in context that there are certain things he had a right to react to.
Right.
So you feeling good, young fellow?
Feeling good.
Okay, now. Got to keep your stamina.
One thing I was gonna say going back to that was it was definitely very personal for Khabib. One moment in the fight I remember, he had Conor in the back position and he was raining down bombs and he was talking trash to him. He was talking stuff to him too. He said, he was like, talk now. He said, what you got to say now? Talk now. And like his broken English. And it got wild. And even after the round, you heard Conor McGregor walk up to him. He said, it's only business. So, yeah, Conor was over here apologizing, trying to cop, please, during the fight.
hey, he don't understand. He's dealing with a straight killer. He don't know nothing about that only business. What he knows is my name, my people are my people. Conor got to understand. You got to – you ain't on the Mayweather block. We're going to be on a promotion with you. This is a straight – he 26-0 in UFC. That means he takes no prisoners. He just straight up hard head in everything else. Well, youngin', I appreciate everything you brought to the table tonight. You know you got to take us to the break, babe. Take us to the break.
Let's go.
We're working with our intern here. We try to get him on the transition.
Oh, my bad, my bad.
We trying to work with him. He trying to bring the dog back at me. Oh, my goodness, you got jokes.
Yep. Shoot, where is he doing that?
I'm going to do it for you. We're going to keep training, y'all. We'll be back, all right?
Next up.
with RSG One Mike. We're here with D. Wilson and my man Hank and Darnell, still learning how to be the producer and the intern, but we'll keep working with him. We're going to tighten this up with the youngin'. But we appreciate that segment. This is a young man that knows a lot about combat sports, and it's great to have him on with us. You know, we all about the youngins. We try to bring them up with us. We're not trying to come up on our own. We're about to move on in to our next segment as we try to close it out here in the show and, you know, have a good show here. We can close out here with the Cypher.
Call the Cypher.
So our Cypher tonight is, I've been listening to this kind of the receiver and sports, and, you know, Chris Carter said something interesting. You never want to make the wide receiver the captain, because the wide receivers just care about getting their money and getting their yards. And the wide receivers have just been kind of consuming the game in a lot of different ways. We got Beckham, you know, sitting with Wayne, talking about Eli. You know, we got all kinds of stuff going on with these receiver game, these divas. And one of the things I want to talk to you, Hank, about, and we'll bring Darnell in a minute to also chime in a little bit on this, is have the stuff with receivers reached a tipping point? Like, at what point do we need to just say, shut the hell up, catch some football? I'm all about getting yours. But these receivers are giving me a headache. And so I thought I'd spend some time with my boy Hank talking about have we reached a tipping point with these dang receivers and all the stuff they're demanding when they way out there, way away from the line, ain't in the battle, and often putting out checks that all these other cats got to cash. They got to be responsible for. What say you?
Here it is. If the one thing that's bothering you is the fact that we are now in the land of social media, we are now in the land of I've got a camera in my face, even if I got to go to the bathroom, then yeah. But don't get twisted or don't be confused as to thinking that this is something that they're getting on your nerves with now. You're just hearing about the prima donnas. They're able to talk to you. But let's go back in history, if you will. Follow me back into the annals of history. When the first wide receiver, Billy White Shoes Johnson, used to return a kickoff and do his little dance in the end zone that got this whole thing started. Don't forget at all about Chad Ochocinco, also known as Chad Johnson, or Terrell Owens, and him running out to the star, or him doing all his little dances. Or dare I say, go back to the Hogs and the Washington Redskins and the Fun Bunch, okay? The wide receivers have always been the little headliner, the one that got this party started, okay? Because they was out there on their island. Even the ones that was great, the Randy Mosses of the world, if you recall him with his pulling his pants down in the playoffs, okay, or playing that he did after a touchdown. They've always been showtime, all right? The problem now is you can hear about that. You might get some game film. You might get some game audio where you might hear get the popcorn ready or all this other kind of stuff. But the only real humble wide receivers you can hear out there was great was a Jerry Rice, who did all of his talking on the field, okay, and was very humble off the field. But see, now you have the wide receiver, your Dez Bryant and those type, that feel like they make the quarterback, not that the quarterback makes them. So they're doing their talking and these sort of things, okay? So this is what you got going on. Yeah, you're gonna be sick and tired of it, but as long as they're willing to put their mic in their face and someone's willing to listen, this is what you're going to get now.
Yeah, and I would say even though some of those players you mentioned, they were creative and witty, right? It wasn't like even T.O., he was doing sit-ups in his driveway, right? He was – Ochocinco was – he put the Hall of Fame jacket, made his own Hall of Fame jacket. Like, it was something his teammates could even laugh at. It wasn't this it wasn't this level of, like when you hear, I love Beckham. Some of the things that Beckham said, I think he was right about in terms of the family, the team, the trust, you know, some of those things he was right about. But, you know, I loved Antonio Brown, but, you know, the Facebook Live and in the locker room when you got a coach like Tomlin. You got a brother over there who's trying to win, who's winning, who people still ain't giving credit, and you just eroding him with the stuff you're doing. It's like it has no strategy. It ain't creative. Even Randy Moss's stuff, what he did, to pretend like I'm wiping with, like that was in a rivalry, and that was, it had some craziness and wittiness to it. That ain't what you're seeing here. You're not seeing anything that is creative, witty, get your popcorn ready type stuff. You just see this some straight up whining on some other stuff. Like, it's like, it ain't about, Billy White Shoes Johnson stuff that is about entertainment versus entitlement. Like, those are two different things. Ocho Cinco saw himself as an entertainer. He wasn't about entitlement for him. And I think that's the difference I'm seeing.
That's more of a societal thing, okay? That's the other piece, if you want to bring that in, okay? That now you're talking about more of a societal thing that has found its way into the NFL, into these other sports, okay? Where you say whatever's on your mind. It used to be taboo to absolutely go after your teammates or go after your quarterback or even go after your coach. You know, but now you are in a, and even with, like we talked about with Jimmy Butler earlier, now you are in an era of sports and of time where I can just say and do whatever the hell I want to and damn whoever listens and care, because this is all about me now. So I can throw my team under the bus. I can throw my coach under the bus. I can throw my quarterback under the bus while I'm still on the team with them. And look here, there's no of fear or of consequences, okay? There's nothing there. There's no retribution or anything that's going to be done with these players, so that's why they're doing it, okay? If you don't check them, guess what happens to the behavior? It's just like with a child. It gets progressively worse, and that's what you're seeing right now. Yeah, the prima donnas out there on the side, because I promise you, your quarterback say that, your running back say that, you know, guess what? I'm not blocking for you the next play. Let's see how that works out for you. See, this is why they kind of be quiet, because they know where they stand. See, especially in football, oh, you want to dog out your offensive line. Okay, dog me out on this play. Whoops. Whereas on the outside, I ain't got to worry about that. Nobody got a block for me. You know,
and
I get past this corner.
Don't you get choked out in the locker room? Don't you get,
huh?
Get choked out in the locker room? Like,
you
at what point you walk through the locker room?
We just had this conversation.
Like this.
Did we
never
just have this conversation?
Walk in the locker room clowning like that. You getting choked out. No.
The problem is, D, is that when it is almost given as a culture to some of these professional locker rooms, that dude right there is untouchable. Excuse me. That dude right there is untouchable. That dude right there, we need him. And we're going to pay him. And once you give him that money, then you have just inflated that ego of entitlement. And that's what a lot of these franchises do. They're just like Dr. Frankenstein. And they're creating their own monsters. And they're like, it's alive, it's alive. And then next thing you know, no, no, Frankie, not me, not me.
And I'm telling you right now, I'm saying you don't have to leave any marks. Like, you know, you can do some work and not leave any marks. Like, it doesn't seem like, see, this is the product of all the calls in terms of where you can get hit, where you can't get hit. Now these cats are emboldened because they know they can't get hit. I'm taking a fine.
Exactly.
I'm going to take a fine. Mm-hmm. I'm going to send some money across in the bank on interest, and this is just the fine I'm going to have to take. I'm going to take one for me and for everybody on the team. To get that, because it's like, I think, because you can barely touch them, and that's
touch.
I might have to take a fine. I just might have to, but it's getting crazy to the fact where these cats can actually control the direction of a locker room, and
right.
They're the farthest away from the football. Like, they are the farthest away from the football, you know. And I'm like, if you keep put me in a position where I got to defend you, then you got to defend yourself. Like, you're not out here blocking. It's not like, you know, you're not like some of these receivers back in the day who are going to come and do the crackback, who are going to get in there and get dirty and, you know, and block the way. You just out here hanging out. You know, you just out here doing your thing. Oh. When the ball comes, you doing what you're doing, but you're not down here getting grimy.
Exactly. You're absolutely right, and that's why. But here's the problem, okay? It's based upon salary. So you could be that offensive lineman. You think you were leader of the offensive line or somebody and try to check them. They're getting on you. You know, and the only thing that does, again, is inflate the ego and inflates that entitlement. And see, if you can't stop it from growing, it's going to eventually explode and explodes all over the locker room. And you ask yourself sometimes, why is this team or that team, you know they got the talent, but they can't seem to get out their own way. This is one of the things we're talking about, and that's why. You think about Odell Beckham Jr. You think about the offensive weapons now that the Giants have. All right? You would think that they would be a little bit, they've always been a defensive-minded team. But now you've got a young man like a Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham. You've got you a veteran quarterback. Okay? You should be better than what you are. But it's very clear.
This is the part that killed me, Hank. And Beckham does his work. But what is Shepard doing?
Right.
What is Shepard doing? What you earn to show folks up on this block? Somebody should have hit him in his throat. And he and the crazy thing about it, he gonna push Odell away. I'm like, where you coming from? That's when I thought, okay, it's going too far. Odell has earned it. He won the top three in the game. But now you gonna play it like you like? Hold it, we ain't winning no games, and you gonna act like what?
Right.
Somebody should have walked past him and accidentally just hit him right in the throat. Bah! He should just something. Like, how are you even getting into this? I'm going to come into that receiver room like, I wish y'all would do that again. We going to have it out right in here. The next one you get on the mic talking, we going to take it to the street. Try me. Like, the defensive players got to come, and somebody got to come and sell out on that. Because when I saw Shepard do it, I'm like, okay, now we got secondary cast thinking they deserve to be in front of the mic. What's going on with this? And I like Shepard, but I'm like, why are you – what gives you the reason to think you can act like that? And I think that's part of it. So as you think about this whole entitlement, you and I talk about this. Are there other elements of sports where that entitlement thing clearly exists?
Well, yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, the thing is about it that drives you crazy is when you got like what you just talked about. When you got guys that they're not the superstar, right? They're not the superstar. They may not even be the third of a big three on a hoop court, but they're doing all the wolfing. They're doing all the talking. Shut up for a minute, okay? You says nothing. What's that y'all say? You gets nothing. I can't stand
that's
that.
Right.
You gets nothing. I cannot stand somebody who's not the star, but they've always got a platform. They've always got something to say, okay? And it's usually so off base. And then you like for example, Jimmy Smith last year. All right, Jimmy Smith last year always had something to say. You know, here's LeBron trying to be cool. He ain't trying to throw his man under the bus, but now he's got to shut him up. Don't say nothing. You embarrassing the team. Stuff like that. I tell you what really grinds my gears, though. It goes on. I'm old school, okay, and I don't bite my tongue on that. I don't like when I hear players calling out their coaches in the media. All right, I got a problem with that. I always think that there should be some sort of order with your team. And if your coach is your head man, you don't call him out in front of the media. I don't care if you're pissed off at him. Okay, there's a level of disrespect there that absolutely fractures a locker room or fractures a team when you're doing that. Because you don't know from week to week that something might click. But when you take authority away from your coach, you've pretty much ruined the whole season. And when you do that stuff in front of folks who don't know what's going on in your locker room from week to week, I got a problem with that.
Yeah, this whole freedom, I'm going to just in the passive aggressive, I'm going to sneak this. Like, everybody drinking. Stop drinking. Like, I'm going to sneak this. Like, what drives me, like, this thing that you can kind of, and you're going to sneak on your coach, and it, that part drives me crazy. One thing about sport, and it's not even the athletes on the field of play. At what point did it become okay for fans to feel like they can say anything to athletes? Like,
yeah,
that part, that has kind of fed the entitlement stuff. Just because you pay for your ticket does not guarantee you the right to say just anything you want to players and say stuff that is like you would never say to them on the street. Like, if you saw them there, you would never say that. But you got, like, 12 security guards and your chest is up in there and you feel like you can say whatever. Like getting to that point where you think you can get down with that, that part just drives me crazy and kind of feeds this whole environment where people just feel like they're entitled to say whatever. I'm always surprised cats are saying what they say. There are times where I actually say, but you need to shut up. But it's
right.
One of those things where, you know, people just feel like because you pay for this ticket, that entitles you to say whatever you want to say in the field of play. And that's not true. That's not anything what it's going to do. And I don't blame, I ain't condoning, but I don't blame when a cat feel like he got to step tippy toe up in there and handle his business. So those things are the kind of things, like, we got this whole kind of framework for entitlement as we are putting in policies to protect and decrease the physical play in a lot of these spaces. People are then being more emboldened. And that part is the part that's worrying me. I would be okay with people recognizing that you are not experiencing it in the same way your predecessors did, and you should appreciate that, right? And don't try to leverage that because I'm going to take the fine. Like, I've already designated 10% of my salary to the fine, just on street credibility. You know what I'm saying? How we going to get down? And that's
right,
the part
right.
that kind of throws me off. So these things that people feel entitled about are the things that we want to hit in on the cipher. One of the things about it is we learn about these things that sometimes this entitlement come back to bite you. So Antonio Brown, there's a lot of discussion about his kind of developed and kind of contrived public persona, given some of the tirades they protected of him, where he's had some incidents in his residence space, some things going on, and now that starts to spill out into the community, right? So we've allowed this behavior to happen in the space. People feel emboldened, and now it spills out into the community, into the neighborhood, impacts some other folk, right? And now he's beginning to – they're starting to peel back the onion, so to speak, on him, and you're starting to see other layers. And this is where that entitlement – this is when, as Dave Chappelle is like, and I'm going to flip it, this is when entitlement goes wrong, right? Just what we just said about the boxer who's criticizing folks about PEDs, and then all of a sudden you get – this is when it's the boomerang effect. This is when it's the glass house effect happens with this. And so when you're a GM, if you're looking at, you know, player development, like if you're thinking about, like, I'm a GM of a team, how do I reset the culture? What are some of the ways in which you might think about how do I reset this culture and build a different kind of organization given these some of these challenges today? How would you go
about
it?
You know what? Here's the thing that I don't understand, because no player should be bigger than the game. And there are some that are.
All right,
okay?
Bo. All right, Bo.
I'm just
this
okay.
Is
week. You tell me that I'm wrong.
The team. Hey, Darnell,
here's
you got to get that drop.
You're trying to build.
The team.
Here's the thing about it, though. Look at somewhere like the Detroit Lions. They've had a losing culture now for 60-plus years. All right? Don't matter who they bring in there, and they're bringing these players in here, they still can't figure it out. Same thing with some of these ones like your Pittsburgh Steelers or your New England Patriots. When I say the players aren't bigger than the team, that means that, listen, if I've got what I need as far as a leader from a leadership perspective and you're not going to follow suit, I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are. I can get somebody else just like you. See, the thing is, D, when we start talking about professional sports, it ain't like you and me, you know, two working stiffs, got to go in there and hit our grind every day. No, we done sat there and we done tried to prepare ourselves educationally. We done tried to prepare ourselves intellectually and any other way to get ourselves to where we are. However, if we don't follow the company line, we're replaced by somebody else, and it moves on. That's the real world. A lot of these guys, and I get it. When you're making that kind of money, when you're under that kind of spotlight, it's not the real world. But in some cases it can be, especially when it starts to erode the culture in which you're trying to build. And when you start talking about teams like the Pittsburgh Steelers, the New England Patriots, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, the Green Bay Packers, you're talking about cultures, winning cultures, that's been there for a while. And then you get this entitlement thing. You shouldn't be afraid if you're a part of the Rooney family, if you're a part of that and say, listen, this ain't the Steeler way. This ain't the Patriot way, you know, because we're going to win championships with you. We may not do it this year, but we're going to continue to win championships because we know how. And see, this is what I don't understand. It's like, yeah, I get it with the NFL players. They feel like, look, my career is going to be 5 years tops if I'm lucky. So I'm going to do what I can and when I can, while I can, because, you know, our contract ain't worth a damn. Okay, our collective bargaining agreement ain't worth the crap. So I'm going to get the most out of it how I can. I get all of that. But from a franchise perspective, you got to have a culture. You got to know what that culture is, unless you've never built one. And you got some programs out there, you've got some teams out there that just ain't built one. But those that have need to keep and follow that line that's won them championships. And then, unfortunately, they let some of these prisoners run the asylum.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's been so disappointing to watch the Steelers and how they're dealing with this. And I say it's a direct correlation to the power of the team shifting to the offense. Because offensive players don't know how to handle success sometimes. You know, I hate to be that way. But when you have Polamalu, you had all those cats on defense, those are, I think, the cats that manage the locker room. When they had some of those strong offensive linemen. But when it shifted to the skill players, the locker room changed. And I see that on some of these teams. The teams that have a stronger defensive balance and presence, I think, have a little bit of more control around some of those things. So even when you talk about Seattle and they talk, a lot of the stuff they talked about were societal and political things. They weren't diva things. They weren't, you know what I'm saying? They weren't all those kind of things. And I think probably because defensive players have, you know, you always have your prime times and cats like that. But when you look, even the Steelers examine that shifted as Polamalu and some of those key defensive players got older who were holding down the culture of the locker room. And, you know, Tomlin's a defensive guy. And so he ain't really – look on that defense. Who's, like, the real leaders right now?
Right.
Like, they got some guys – who, you know, who can Hayward and guys like that. But Hayward's like, he doesn't say much. When he says stuff, people listen. But you don't have a guy like Polamalu who is leading folks and connecting with them. You don't have some of the incredible, you know, they always had these great outside linebackers who were like the emotional leaders and who were somewhat set fear in that locker room. You know, T.J. Watt's too young. Some of the guys, they like are maturing into their roles. So I think, and I've watched teams like that lose some of that. And you see with some of these teams who have some of these receivers dominating the stuff, the defensive locker room side of it isn't as strong to like counterbalance it in a way that allows for that respect to be there. They just want issues with the Giants. When the Giants was humming the Giant way, that they was run by them, that front four, that front seven, they had some straight dogs. And even though they had some great offensive players, them dogs at the end of the day set the tone. And exactly. I think there's something to be said about that.
Same thing with the Ravens.
Same thing with the Ravens. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how teams, you know, this is about how you cultivate leaders. How do you set leadership in the locker room? How do you help people understand how to handle success? This is player development type stuff. I love the opportunity. I got a really good friend who is doing player development in the NFL. I'd love to have him come on and talk about the player development side. How do you help these guys handle success? How do you help them position themselves to be not only personally successful, but to be in that team environment? And a lot of these player development, they've been advancing a little bit on this player development side. I'm looking forward to maybe having one of my cats come on and talk about that stuff. We're going to go to drop the mic, and we've trained to drop the mic. We used to switch off. I dropped the mic, then Hank would drop the mic. But one of the things that's important in my culture, in our culture, and even how we grew up, you know, most of y'all know that Hank and I know each other. And Hank and my brother, those are always the elders. We would go and hang out with them. And then we would learn, and then we took their stuff and remixed it. And in that spirit, when I think about dropping the mic, I'm like, we can't end the show. The show should always end with the elder voice dropping the mic. That's just kind of how we got to do it as a way of adding back into the culture. Because I think one of the byproducts and one of the things we've lost in this microwave generation, because the young folks have acquired information much more so than their elders, is that they think that information equals wisdom, and it doesn't. Information doesn't equal experience. Information is just information. And if you don't know how to apply it, the way you learn to apply it is by listening to the folks who have life experience give you game. Cats who grew up in the hood understand that. In the barbershop, you hear it. When the elder's speaking, you got to sit back and listen because they're dropping that science. And even though you might disagree with certain elements of it, there's some stuff to be taken away from it. So from now on, as long as we do this show, my brother Hank, because he's big brother Hank to me, will be dropping the mic. So I'm going to give the mic to you.
Appreciate you, D. Tonight, you know, we kind of touched on it a little bit, and we touched on it a little bit last week. I want to preface it this way. We talked a little bit in depth about, you know, Durant going to Golden State or LeBron going to whatever teams we go to try to win championships. We watch, you know, heated games come off and guys is hugging each other and all this other kind of stuff. What I want to talk a little bit about tonight is, whatever happened to good old-fashioned hate? Whatever happened to good old-fashioned hate? You know, back in the day, before the San Francisco Giants went to San Francisco and the Dodgers went to Los Angeles, both of those teams played in New York, and they played each other a lot, and they hated each other. And the players on the teams hated the players on the other teams, to the point where if I was being traded to somewhere, don't trade me to those cats because I don't want to play with them, okay? Back in the 80s, when you watched basketball, when you had Magic Lakers and you had Birds, Celtics, some of the best basketball you ever wanted to see. Why? Because those teams hated each other. You could see it on the floor. You could see it in their eyes. They didn't go up after the game and say, nice game, because they didn't want to, because it wasn't a nice game, okay? Vince Lombardi, the legendary coach in which the trophy is named after, once said, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. What it is, folks, is what I'm talking about here is when you get between the lines, when you get on the court, when you get on the field, okay, you're going against a rival. You're going against somebody that you got to see all the time, okay? You respect the game. You respect the court. You respect everything about it. But understand one thing. If you got anything else but disdain in your heart for that few hours that you're playing against that other person, then there's something wrong with you. It is that heavy. Don't sit here and tell me and say, this is the problem right now. We live in a society where we give out participation trophies. Well, there ain't no participation trophies in real life. This is why we got entitlement. Nobody owes you nothing. And nowhere else but on a sports field where they don't owe you nothing. There's got to be some good old-fashioned healthy hate so that you can get through to the next score. That's our show for tonight. God bless you and keep you safe.